This all takes place after the experience that Yaakov Avinu had, saw that in his dreams angels going up and down the ladder, and coming to the conclusion, right, this is he makes certain kinds of spiritual decisions, like v'shavti v'shalom v'beit avi. He says if he comes back with peace, v'ya Hashem li l'elukin, and I accept the burden or the onus of God upon me. The interesting part is that religiously, it would seem that Yaakov, I mean, this is part to me, right? I have to say that all the time. That Yaakov Avinu, it seems, did not have like a religious perception. It wasn't so clear as he became after he encountered the dream. He encountered the angels going up and down, and God promising him specifically that he would come back in peace. And so then he declares, "Vaya Hashem li l'elokim," that if this all works out, God will be mine. Which means that Yaakov Avinu was different from Abraham and Yitzchak, both of whom had absolute faith in God. And Yaakov Avinu seems to be a developing kind of personality. We are allowed to follow how he develops into being Yaakov Avinu. Didn't start out this way, and that itself is radical. It's a radical idea that the avot. It's not just about how the one group of Jews portray the avot and another group of there's this fight or disagreement about whether you can portray the avot as being regular people. And it's important to understand that both sides are correct. I mean, it is true that most extraordinary people have regular sides to them. You know, if you ever met or think of like a great non-Jewish personality. If you met a great non-Jewish personality, so you might see the greatness, but you might also see the regularity of him. But in the stories that are told, people become irregular all the time. Everything about them becomes irregular. So Avraham and Yitzchak, Avraham was God's love for Avraham. Ohavi. God said, and Yitzchak we call the Chazal called Yitzchak an Olat Tmima. Olat Tmima, he was ready to be sacrificed, and he was Tamim. Tamim means perfect. He had no physical imperfections that would prevent him from being sacrificed. Olat Tmima. Now Yaakov, it is. I mean, you understand that Yitzchak certainly. After Akedat Yitzchak, after the binding of Isaac, after that almost sacrifice of Yitzchak, he remained the same. He was always the same. He never changed. Nothing ever changed about Yitzchak. As far as his preference for Esav over Yaakov, well, we could either assume that he knew what was going on or that he didn't know what was going on. But if he knew what was going on, no less than Rivka knew what was going on, then you have to say that, as I think we said last week, that Yitzchak tried to bring Esav back into the fold and thought that if he would come and do a mitzvah, like bring him food to eat, not so much that he was hungry. I mean, it wasn't like Esav was hungry. Esav sold the Bechorah, his birthright, because he was hungry, which seems, like conceptually to be a very low kind of act to do. Like the Gashmiyut drives your life. Like what you're going to eat drives your life. Now, there are a lot of people who like to eat, but Esav was special. Esav was special. He said that if I don't do this, I may not live. And if I don't live, what's the whole point of everything? And so not only was the Gashmiyut, you know, the real of things so important to him, but he felt that without that, he would just die away. Right? Which is, you know, people who are champions of the ethical could see that this is being a serious problem. So here's Yaakov. Yaakov had an experience, a personal experience, which was remarkable. Let's say, right? He had this remarkable experience in which he clarified something about his relationship to God. That's what happened. That's what happened to Yaakov Avinu. So we could all appreciate that. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. Everybody looks for that experience. When I say everybody, I don't mean that I know that. But maybe people, everybody wants, like religious people, if they are sane, would like being religious to be vindicated somehow. Right? So we say, oh, it was a miracle, right? We say that all the time. What's a miracle? A miracle vindicates me. Like if I have a miracle, if I cross the street and the car misses me and doesn't hit me, and it's not a miracle, so then, you know, it's nothing. But if it's a miracle that the car missed me, that's really a wonderful thing, because that miracle is instituted by God, so God is watching out after me. I have a real case of God watching out after me. So anyway, here is Yaakov. He's gone through this experience. I'm going to read it from this chumash that I have, and you can look at the sheet. I read it because the letters here are bigger, not because they're better. What? No, this is all right. This is, I think the letters, I measured the letters. They trick you. Now we want to look at this with Rashi, right? Because Rashi is sensitive to things that we should be sensitive to. This is Perikav Tet Pasuk Aleph. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. He lifted up his feet. Vayelech Arza B'nei Keden. So you know, whenever you read something, there are things that seem, well, when we read them, that are perfectly normal. But like you read a newspaper, it says like reasonable sentences that are understandable. But in another 100 years, if they read that newspaper, it might turn out to be quite funny. And they would ask questions like we're asking. Like we ask questions about the text from our vantage point of normal. Like what would a normal text read? So Rashi didn't like this Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. He picked up his legs. Why did he have to pick up his legs? So Rashi says, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. You see the Rashi? Min Baser.
We're starting with
Oh goodness. Oh goodness. Okay. Well, you have to come back next year. I have to do it with the sheet, don't I? In any event, the part before Pasuk Yud Zayin, which should also be on the sheet, I didn't even have the sheet, right? That's why I was so confident. I didn't have. Okay, let's do it again. Lelavan Shtei Banot. Shame. We're going to learn the story of Yaakov's marriage. Right, that's the story. Each of the Avot gets married. Abraham got married to Sarai, and then God changed her to Sarah. So what that means exactly, I don't know, but you know that anytime there's a change of a name, it's like a new person. And this comes down to us even in modernity, you know, people who are very sick, Rahmanul Islam, you know, they change their names. Why do they change their names? Because they want to be somebody else. They don't want to be the person who's sick and dying. They're hoping that maybe the change in the name will affect whoever's in charge of killing people in heaven. And then the name will change. So Sarai became Sarah. Avram became Abraham. So the first Jewish couple, the first Jewish couple had no ancestors. Right? They didn't come from anybody. It's the same way we say when someone is converts to Judaism, he doesn't have any relatives anymore. He's a new person. He's a Jew. So his father must also be a Jew. So we call him up to the Torah, assume women. We call him up to the Torah, we say Ben Abraham. Right? We connect him with his name. Names are also connectors. Right? So Abraham and Sarah were originals. They were not the children of somebody, but they were both of them new. So that Yitzchak had one parent. Yitzchak had one parent, and his parent was Abraham and Sarah. Those were his parents. Yitzchak's parents. Now we come along to Yitzchak. He has two children, interestingly enough, as I think I pointed out, right? Abraham had two sons that we know about. He had other children with Keturah, but we know about two sons. One son's name was Yitzchak, and the other son's name was Yishmael. So it turns out that Abraham and Sarah, that new couple, only had one son. And that one son, his name was Yitzchak. And the other, Abraham and Hagar, had another son whose name was Yishmael. But Yishmael had nothing to do with the family because he wasn't part of that family. The family was the family of Abraham and Sarah. That was the family. Everybody else, anybody else who was either the son of Abraham or maybe the son of Hagar, they don't count. So now, Yitzchak, he had two children who were twins, which means that they both had the same mother and the same father. Right? Unlike the children of Abraham, they had the same mother and the same father, and nevertheless, the two of them were not able to be part of the same family. Right? Yitzchak was in, and Yishmael was out for some reason. Right? Yaakov was in, and Esav was out. So now Yaakov, he's going to be a departure. He's going to be a departure. How so? Well, look at what it says. It says, one second. Here it is. Lelavan shnei banot, shem hagedola. I'm sorry. Shem hagedola le'ah, v'shem haktana Rachel. Okay, this is our introduction. He has two daughters. Obviously, they are of marriageable age. Everybody's a marriageable age in those days. Because, you know, it doesn't matter what your age was. You get married whenever you're supposed to get married. So there's a statement that's made about each of these ladies. Let's look at the Rashi. She ainei le'arakot. Rashi says, "Shaita sbura la'alot begoralo shel Esav uvachta shayu hakol omrim shnei banim lirivka v'shei banot le'lavan agdola la'gadol v'ktana la'katan." So there you have it. Who is Leah? Who is Leah? Hey, Leah made a mistake. She conjectured incorrectly. But apparently everybody else had the same conjecture that Leah might end up marrying Esav. And since she knew that that would be a tremendous loss of opportunity, let's say, so she cried. She was that close, and she cried all the time. And it says about Rachel, she hi yifat Torah, hu tzurat ha-patsuf. So Rashi explains that she was. You looked at her; she looked beautiful. She looked beautiful. So on that basis, the Torah's introduction. Torah's introduction to the Leah and Rachel conundrum. Who comes off sounding better? I think Leah, without a doubt. I mean, all we could say about, okay, there was a certain, even in the ancient world, there was, ancient, I mean, from our point of view, not from theirs. Even in the ancient world, there was a certain kind of respect for feminine beauty. It was something important. It was not something that was overlooked or denied. We saw that Avram Avinu had a wife who was considered to be beautiful when she went to Egypt. Yitzhak had a wife who was considered to be beautiful when he went to Gran, the land of the Plishtim. And around that beauty that they both contained, there unfolded a story. So it's hard to say that the beauty of these women was insignificant or unnecessary or irrational or anything of that kind. So I would say that Leah comes off very well according to Rashi. Leah's worried about the future. Leah's worried about who she's going to marry. Leah is upset, dramatically so upset about the fact that she may not be able to marry a significant personality in his historical terms. So that's what the Pasuk says. Along comes Yaakov, who's a Yoshevo Halim. Yaakov sits and learns Torah all the time. But he decides, Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel, Vayome Evad Chashav Shanim Rachel Vitchak Tana. He loved Rachel. And so Yaakov is a serious departure from Yitzchak. Right, remember Yitzchak? So at the end of the parasha of Chayei Sarah, Eliezer shows up with a wife. He shows up with a wife. Just 1 second, I'll tell you the pasuk. They're meeting. Right? Yeah. Remember, Yitzchak stayed home in Canaan. Eliezer went to Aram Naharaim to bring a wife back. He's coming back on these camels. He and Rivka. So the pasuk says, "Vayisay Yitzchak lasuf basadeh lifnot erev." Yitzchak went out to speak out in the field towards evening. Like the Gemara says, "He davened mincha." Vayisay na vayar veinek malim baim. He looks up and he sees camels. Right? You know, you see camels. This is like something to think about. You know, it's like you see a car and you think you know who's in it. You see a camel, but you don't yet see who's on the camel. Like all you see is a camel. All you see is a camel. Zigbalim ba'im. Vatisa rifkat eineha vatera et yitzchak vatipol me'ala gamal. And Rivka saw who she supposed was the man of her dreams. And she fell off the camel, whatever that meant. I mean, I guess it means she was nervous and excited. She fell off the camel. Vatomer la'eved, mi ha'ish alazeh olech basadeh likrateinu. Vayom ha'eved hu adonai. Vatikach ha'tzaif vatikach. And she said, who is this? Said to Eliezer, who is this guy who's walking along? So Eliezer said, that's my master. So she took a veil and covered up her face. Right? Remember, for ladies. Vayisaper ha'eved li Yitzchak et kol ha'dvarim asher asah. The slave told Yitzchak all that had transpired. Now here's the pasuk that I'm looking for. You ready? Vayibieha Yitzchak o'ela sara imo vayikach et rivka batilo ili isha he brought her into his mother's tent, and he took Rivka, but he lo liisha. I guess it means he married her, whatever that meant. Vayehaveha, and then he loved her, and from that on, the drasha that all the young kalot get is first you get married, and then you fall in love. That's how it works. Don't try a different approach. So that Yitzchak, we assume, was a traditionalist. He did it the way people were supposed to do it. They fell in love with their wives. Yaakov did it differently. He fell in love with a woman and then decided to make her his wife. Now that's a point of departure. That's a point of departure. This didn't happen for Abraham and it didn't happen for Yitzchak. As far as Abraham is concerned, I mean, he was always married to Sarai. And then she became Sarai. As far as Yitzchak is concerned, he married Rivka and then he fell in love with her. As I state, that's what it says. He fell in love with her after he married her. With Yaakov, back to our Pasuk, Pasuk Bichet, Yaakov et Rachel vayomer, that's what he said to her father. You see the Rashi? That you'll be there for a certain amount of time. So he picked 7 years, right? And then the next Rashi says, "Berachel b'tchak tana, kol asimanim halalu lama." So Rashi asks one of those Rashi kind of questions. Yaakov said, "Berachel b'tchak tana, Rachel." He only has that's one daughter named Rachel. B'tchak, she's your daughter. Aktana, she's the smaller one. So Rashi says, well, why did he have to do that? Why couldn't he just say Rachel? Everybody would know who Rachel is. So Rashi explains, as Rashi explains, that you had to need all 3 points, all these designations, in order to make sure that he would get, he knew that Lavan was going to fool him. Okay, Pasuk Yotet. Vayomer Lavan tov titi ota lecha mititi ota leish acher. I'd rather you marry her than somebody else marry her. Whatever that means, Rashi doesn't explain. But Lavan has some rationale. He has some reason for complying with the fate here, with the fate of history. Shvai Madi Pasuk Kaf Vayavo Yaakov Berachel Sheva Shanim Vayu Beinaf Yamim Achadim Bavato Ota. So you see again that the Pasuk, he worked for 7 years in order to get to gain her hand, right? And they were in his eyes ki yamim achadim. It was this time flew by, ba'avato ota. So there's this emphasis. This is the first time that we know about romantic love determining the future of the couple that we're talking about. This is not supposed to happen, and it doesn't happen in the Muslim world, in shidduchim in the Muslim world. There are always stories told about that, how the shidduch is forced upon the woman. She has no choice. She can't argue the case. And here we have the husband's reaction to a very bad situation. Vayomer Yaakov Lavan hava et ishti ki malu yamai vavo eleha. Let me marry her now. I've done my part of the bargain. You malu yamai. I've served you for 7 years. There's no need for any more. And I will live with her. Ve'esof Lavan et kol anshei makom v'yash mishteh. And it would seem that Lavan complied. He made a big party, invited everybody. Va'iba erev pasuk kav gimel. Va'ikached le'yav bito ve'yavei ota elav ve'yavo eleha. And he went to his daughter he went to his daughter Leah, not to Rachel. Vayave ota elav. Vayavo el, and he brought her to Yaakov. Vayitein Lavan lat zilpa shivchato leleah bito shivcha. And Leah had a handmaiden, Zilpa, and she came along in the deal. Vayi baboker v'inehi Leah. Vayomer Lavan, Ma zot asita li, alo brachel avadati yivach, v'lama rimitani. V'lama rimitani. So everybody knows that sometimes the way it works in the world that God established is that is midah keneged midah. That how do you know that you're being punished for a transgression? Midah keneged, for a specific transgression. Midah keneged midah. All the Rishonim seem to agree that this is the case. In other words, if you stole something, somebody will steal something from you. If you hurt somebody, spoke Lashon Hara about them, somebody will come and speak Lashon Hara about you. Midah keneged midah. Yaakov, who for better or for worse, he had a reason, he didn't have a reason, he fooled his father. Right? He stole something from his father. He stole a blessing, he stole an idea, he stole an identity, he stole something, he fooled him. So here is Yaakov's life being determined by somebody who is fooling him. Right? That's what it says. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Zlama rimitani. Why did you act in this deceitful way? Why is it that you told me one thing and you produced another? Lama rimitani. What was the rimitani of Yaakov? Are you Esav? I'm Esav. Right? Change of name. What's the rimitani of Lavan? Is it Leah? No, it's Rachel. Right? Exactly the same. Exactly the same. The names change. I mean, that's the rimitani. The rimitani, so we could say midah keneged midah, that somehow, even though Yaakov, in some way, we could explain that Yaakov did the right thing. And the result was the necessary result. It was that the bracha should devolve upon Yaakov and not upon Esav. And if you have to be deceitful in order to avoid a conflagration, I mean fire, in order to avoid a fire, you had to somehow fool Yitzchak, then that was the right thing to do. That may have been all true. But it does not change the fact that Yaakov Avinu had to fool his father. And that's what Esav had against him. Esav said he's done it already several times. He stole my birthright. Now he's stealing my bracha. Esav said that. So that had to be cleared up. This matter of Rimitani had to be cleared up before Yaakov went back to Eretz Kanan and confronted Esav. And here it is. He's clearing it up. He's saying, oh, you did it to me. What I did to him, you have done to me. Why did you fool me? We don't do that here. We don't give the younger girl before the older girl. So you see, what do you see? That rimitani doesn't mean that you did it for an unacceptable purpose. That there's no rationale. Here's Lavan, he says to Yaakov, look, this is how we do it. I don't have time to talk to you about it. But you take the older daughter first, and then you can take the younger daughter. But you can't just take the younger daughter. So that's good. So you didn't have to fool him. He could have told him that at the outset. He could have made a deal with Yaakov. Look, take Leah, then take Rachel. But he didn't. He didn't. So that fooling him derives from the midah keneged midah, that Yaakov Avinu did what he did, And therefore, Lavan did what he did. Right? Lavan berimitani. Vayomer Lavan lo yasekei bimkomeinu letei datzira lefnei habechira. We don't do it that way. Valeishem uazot. Venitna lecha gam etzot ba'avodah shetavod imadi od shev shanim acherot. You should just continue to work, and you'll get her. You'll get Rachel as well. Pasuk kafchet v'yas Yaakov kein v'yimalei shavu azot v'yitein lo et Rachel b'itol lo l'isha. It would seem almost that Lavan was straightforward and honest, and what happened to Yaakov Avinu had to happen to Yaakov Avinu. So we see that on the issues of love, relationship based on love, as opposed to a relationship that grows into love, Yaakov Avinu was a demarcation from Avraham and Sarah. Avraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka. For both of them, the love seems to have been primordial. Like, they were always in love. They were never anything else but in love. And certainly, according to the Chumash, Yitzchak was in love with Rivka after he married her, and not before he married her. Yaakov had this burning desire for Rachel for the first time that he saw her, before there was any chance of him marrying her. So, Pasuk Tet, Vayitein Lavan Rachel Bito et Bilha Shivchato Lo Lishivcha. So this is also another departure, right? There were everybody in every story of Abraham and Yitzchak. There are other women around. Having a different wife is not remarkable. However, the other wife, right, the Hagar of Abraham, could never produce the offspring that they were hoping for, Abraham and Sarah. She just couldn't. And so the fact is that the Avot also teach us that children are born of parents. I mentioned this before. That you need two parents. You can't just have a man and a woman who is accidentally the biological recipient of sperm. There's no such thing, according to the stories in the Torah. But there have to be special people. There have to be special people. Suddenly there's a reversal. There's a reversal of that idea. There's Avraham and Yitzchak. Yitzchak had only one wife, right, who bore him two sons. And she was apparently very clever and very knowledgeable and able to be significant in this setup. That's Avraham and Yitzchak, right? But Hagar could never become the wife that Avraham was looking for. That could never happen because her training, her background, the way she thought about things was antithetical to the way Abraham thought about it. So she could never be the mother of the next generation. And she couldn't be the mother of the next generation. But look what's happening to Yitzchak. Yaakov. Yaakov not only gets two wives, he gets two spare. Right? Two spare wives. Who are these spare wives? I mean, where did they come from? What credentials do they have? What credentials do they have? It's almost as though, I think almost, as though the Torah says that if you've got a good wife, you could have a associate wife. You know, if the right wife is in your household, the less than right wife could also be in your household. Once you have, I mean, this is a new idea, once you have a father and a mother who are bringing up the children, it doesn't matter if there's some children from that wife and other children from another wife, but you know, in any event, that the big change that Yaakov Avinu managed to make in the world of the promises to Avraham Avinu, the change that Yaakov Avinu made, besides reordering the family a little bit, was to have two wives that were unexpected. They came in on a different principle. Whatever the principle was, Laban said, okay, is my daughter deserve another wife? And those wives had children. And those children became part of the 12 tribes. Right? And Rashi says several times that everybody knew that they were going to be 12 tribes. Right? 12 tribes. And therefore, when she had Yehuda, who had Yehuda?
Leah.
So Leah had four sons. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Right? So the question, what the Torah explains, where does the name Yehuda come from? What is Yehuda? So Yehuda is some form of the Hebrew Odeh. Aleph Vav Dalet Hei Lahodot. To give thanks. Why did she call him Yehuda? To give thanks, because she knew that Yaakov was supposed to have 12 sons. And since he had four wives, that would mean that each wife would have three sons. Right? That's called arithmetic. 12 divided by 4 is 3. So that when Leah had a fourth son, whose name was Yehuda, she decided, they became Yehuda, she decided that she has to sort of register her thanks all the time. Everybody say, Yehuda, oh, that's the fourth son. That's the fourth son of Leah. Fourth son of Leah. So that the Rachel, remember Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
The one that Yaakov loves? So she's demoted. She's the mother. She only had, how many sons did she have?
Two.
Right. So two is less than three. Which would have been even. Like if everybody would have three sons. But in fact, who has four sons?
Leah.
And who has this opportunity to see that that it's by the grace of God that she's having this fourth son? That's also Leah. Leah, who we met at the beginning, right? You met that her eyes were rakot, enelei arakot, because she was crying that she might be paired off with Esau. And she certainly didn't want that. So she is presented to us as a strongly religious personality. Whereas Rachel, do I have any grandchildren named Rachel? Oh, good boy. I don't want to say anything bad. I take it back. But you know that Rachel is not given a lot of kavod in this story. What it says about Rachel is that she was Yifat Torah. Yifat Torah is an accident. I mean, it may be true, but it was an accident nonetheless. Whereas Leah, her Einei HaRakot, she was crying over her destiny. She was not crying about how she looked or whether Yaakov looked at her. So we see that Leah was presented as being that kind of special person. And eventually she had four sons. And because she had four sons, she learned that Hodayah, being thankful, precedes what we call bracha. In other words, you have to evaluate. You have to be able. She was able to evaluate what she thought she deserved, and that beyond that, she evaluated what she got more than she deserved, and what she got more than she deserved. She invented this idea of odaya, that you thank God for the good things that happened to you. So we've almost finished. We have gam Rachel. We have gam Rachel Minaya. He lived with Rachel, which was always the case. He always loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. And this is either a good thing or a bad thing. So here's Yaakov Avinu, he's stuck. He's still working. We don't know why exactly. Rashi says, "Acherot, hikishan larishonot." They're parallel to the first. I mean, how did you get marishonot be'emuna, af achronot be'emuna? Just like the first 7 years were with faith, like he knew that he was going to come out with a good thing. These are also be'emunah. V'afal pi she b'ramaut ba'alav, even though Lavan treated him badly, he said these 7 years will be like the other 7 years. So we see that, I think that what you see here is that Yaakov reorganized, humanized. I mean, why do people like Yaakov? I mean, you know, people always like to talk about Yaakov. But Yaakov is the most human of the Avot. Human in the sense that we recognize him. I mean, it's a little hard to recognize Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu got a message from God, go sacrifice yourself. We went to do it. I mean, it's hard for us to think of ourselves in that way, that we could be Yaakov Avinu, Avraham Avinu. The same thing is true about Yitzchak. Yitzchak was, after all, the one who was willing to sacrifice himself. He said, if that's what God wants, okay, then we'll do it. Also a difficult act to follow. I mean, how many people could see themselves as Yitzchak? But Yaakov Avinu, that we could all see ourselves as Yaakov Avinu. It's intrigues, trying to get out of it, doing something his mother wanted, doing something his father wanted, going off to the middle of nowhere to reformulate his life, starting out by recognizing the fact that, you know, he says, Ein zekim beit elokim v'zeh shar shamayim. You know what the Shara Shavayim is? You know what a Shara is? A Shara is a gate. Who said that there was a gate? Who said there was a gate? Look up, is there a gate? I don't know. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But there could be a gate. When they built the Tower of Babel, what were they doing? They wanted to capture heaven. In order to get up to heaven, to capture it, they had to build this big structure that would get them there. All right, it was not successful. But it remained part of the ethos of those who learned the Bible, that there is a heaven that is accessible to us. I mean, not clear exactly how to do it. But this idea that the heavens are accessible is an idea that exists in the Torah and that we could adopt for ourselves. So when Avraham Avinu, when Yaakov said, Zeh Shar HaShamayim, he said, this is the gate that leads me to heaven. He was saying that when you recognize the existence of God, you also recognize the fact that you'd like to get closer. And this is the thing that bothers religious people, really religious people. I don't mean they're really religious people, about doing mitzvah actions. or going to shul. For example, the most glaring dissonance in our religious lives is going to shul. Because if some non-Jew would stop me on the street and say to me, what are you doing? So I'm going to God's place. I'm going to have a divine interview. Of course, when I get there, it's not quite like that. At least the interview part. The people are unhappy in shul, generally. Men are unhappy, and women now are dying to be as unhappy. It's like, you know, everybody has, wherever I go these days, people want me to talk about, like, dominion. So I would say to them, look, I don't know. One question is it halachically mutter to have a, what do they call them? Participatory minyan.
Oh, yeah.
A partnership.
Partnership minyan, is it halachically correct? So my answer is that I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I'm not sure. You know, the people who are against it, most people with beards are against it. Most men with beards are against it. Because they all heard that the women are going to sit in front of the shul, you know, it's like, and take their seats. So they don't like it. But what's it called?
Partnership.
So I don't think there's anything halachically wrong with it. I don't know. I would never daven in a partnership minyan, but that's probably because I'm old.
You have a beard also.
No, I don't have such a long beard. I'm talking about people with longer beards. But I don't. I'm used to what I'm used to. You know, you get old. That's what happens. Old people become very conservative. Because they can't switch to a new idea so fast. So it's easier to go to the same shul you went to your whole life. But I don't see, the thing about going to shul is that it generally makes me unhappy. But I don't think if I go to a partnership minyan that I'll be happy. I mean, I just think it'll be the same. But people sitting.
Yeah,
I'm saying. So I want somebody to solve my problem.
Men look at women.
You're afraid
of
women.
Right?
Yeah. Women, they look at women.
That's the problem. Exactly. Women are okay with it, but men have a problem.
So then you're back to having minyanim with only women, but that's not so good.
Rabbis don't like it.
Shul rabbis are very unaccustomed to change.
Also, they're losing.
I don't know. I mean, those men don't know that they've lost already. The CEOs of all the major banks in the world today are women. So what? You think one of those women want to be the president of the shul? I don't think so. I mean, what difference do you make? Anyway, it's a conversation. What?
You want the good jobs.
The good jobs, right? It's a conversation. It's a combination for another moment. Now, if we look at the sheet, on the back of the sheet, I suppose, what is all this?
That's what
I'm
going to say.
Meshi Law.
Yeah, let's look at the Meshi Law. The Meshi Law says this. V'tomer apam odet Hashem. Right, what pasuk is that? I mentioned it. It was not on the sheet. What?
It was Lamed
Hay. No, but what? What is it? Who said it? Leah said it about Yehuda. Leah said it about Yehuda, her son. Ita b'gimara, Omari, ima malach adam yagati v'lo matzati, al tami. Lo yagati matzati, al tami. This is a famous statement by Rabbi Yehuda. If a person says, I worked hard, but I wasn't able to achieve, don't believe it. Somebody says, I didn't work hard and I achieved, don't believe it. But if somebody says, I worked hard and I achieved, then you should believe it. Vineba Gemara, Vadai lo b'shuvteini askinan, sheze ha'omer yagati v'lo matzati, v'ze sha'omer, one second, ze ha'omer yagati v'lo matzati, I worked hard but I didn't achieve, ayre kisha'anu ro'im sheyagahar be'i v'lo matzah. V'chein almer lo yagati umatzati arei she'anu ro'im shelo yaga umatzah. V'ayin kein ech sheyach le'mor al ta'amin. In other words, he's asking, he doesn't understand the statement that if I didn't work hard and I didn't find it, so what do you mean al ta'amin? I see that the guy works hard and he didn't succeed. The depths of this statement in Chazal is found in the relationship between Rachel and Leah. Ki betach imenu Rachel kama tefilot v'kama bakashot biksha sheyoshia la Hashem. She davened all the time and prayed that God would save her. Ach mipnei zeh lo ho'ila lefi she'nemar v'atekanei Rachel b'achota v'utzecha akin'ah litbarer imhu kin'at sofim shehu l'shem shamayim o kin'ah be'alma kefiderech ha'teva chas v'shalom. So he says, Rachel, she was jealous of her sister, of her older sister who had more children. And the question was, you have to figure out whether this jealousy was l'shem shamayim, whether she thought that she should have more children, it would be better for the Jewish people if she was the mother of more of the 12 tribes, or it was regular kinah, like she has more and I have less, so I'm jealous of what she, I'm sure what she has. So he says, sometimes you see that people have talent, tova. There's something good about them. But that good is being prevented from being actualized because of some other feeling that he has. Because she itrapeya chisaron, lo yo'il kama tfilot v'sigufim la'adam ad she itrapeya chisrono v'az yivasha. So it doesn't matter. In those, you have to focus on the right thing. Sometimes there's a chain of things that are preventing you from achieving what you might achieve. So let's say the person is very talented in music. So, but somehow he's not able to get up on the next rung of the ladder. So it's either because, so he davens. So he davens. In this case, the story is that Rachel davened. But her davening was not answered. That's what the Meshiloch is thinking about. She davened, she was a great davener. She was such a great davener that when she died, she was on the road, right? Racha Mevakal Baneha, that's something that we all know that Yirmiyahu Navi established for us for forever. So why was it that she was not able to be successful in davening for herself? Why was that the case? So the answer of the Meshiloch is that sometimes you have a problem, you see an obvious problem, but further guarding that problem or making it impossible for that problem to be solved is another problem, which you don't notice so much because it's not something that necessarily interests you. And therefore, B, problem B is not going to be solved before problem A is solved. V'kodem sheyitrapeya chisaron lo yo'il kama tefilot v'sigufim l'adam ad sheyitrapey chesrono o yivasha. Al kein, nefi sherachel utzricha l'chabel להתחבר במידות קנאה, במידות קנאה, וקודם שנתבררה בזאת לא הועילה שום תפילה וכל יגיעת. אבל כן, כאשר ביקשה מיעקב אבינו שיתפלל בעידה חרה עליה, he got angry when she asked him to daven. ולהפין זאת כי הלא כדין עשתה, ומי שיש לה צרה בתוך ביתו ילך אצל חכם. That if you have some difficulty at home, you should go to a chacham and ask for a bracha. Hiksha Ramban Zal, ak machamat shekatuv, kodem yitkanei Rachel, akei viter Yaakov machamat she mikodem aita tzricha litbarer kin ata. Ak shamra Yaakov inei, amati lefanecha, vivanei gam anochi mimena, מזה נראה שכוונתה הייתה לשם שמיים, שהרי הכניסה צרתה לתוך ביתה, וזה פרש שגעתי ולא מצאתי אל תאמין. So in other words, the Rei Shiloh introduces us to another idea, and that idea is that Rachel may have had some deficiency which prevented her from having more children, and that's what she wanted her husband Yaakov to daven for, that she should have children. So we know that Yaakov, whether he was presented to Rachel, she had a problem. Her problem was that the only thing that could be said about her was Yifat Torah. Now Yifat Torah is not a bad thing, but if it's the only thing that you could say about a person, it's not a compliment. It's not a great compliment. So Rachel was unable to face Yaakov. Yaakov understood that Rachel lacked a certain kind of depth and a certain kind of significance. And therefore, when she came to him and said, pray for me, he says, I can't, because there's something bothering everything. Your relationship to God is being bothered by the Yifat Torah. The Meshidot doesn't say Yifat Torah, but I think that it's a reasonable way to understand what the Meshiloch is getting at.
Didn't she take these, his son brought these herbs? She was like a little superstitious.
The Shrafim?
The Dudaim from Ruvain.
What?
The Dudaim from Ruvain.
Oh, Ruvain. Yeah, I guess.
Ruvain brought for Leah.
Yeah, okay, but the only pasuk that we read was about the Yifat Torah, so I'm putting it all on that. But it could be that there were other problems that she had in terms of kind of evaluating who she was in this new family that had been created. As it seems that Leah managed to understand herself, who she was. She gave her dayah. She gave all the Yad HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fact that she had the extra son, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, and they, of course, are the important sons of Yaakov Avinu.
Doesn't it sort of put a blemish on Yaakov if he loved her, and the only thing that the Torah could say about her was that she was Yifei Torah?
Maybe, but I think it could be seen also as being real. In other words, Yaakov was the first one out of choice. Here were the daughters of Laban, and Yaakov said, "Well, I want to marry this one. I don't want to marry that one." He had that choice. Avraham, we don't hear that he had a choice, and Yitzchak certainly didn't have a choice. And so the families, I think, became more real to us. Yaakov was the most real. Yaakov had children. Yaakov children who denied his authority as the father, went to fight in Shechem and kill everybody they could, even though the father clearly said, "Don't do it. Don't go that way. You've done us a great disservice. You've done the Jewish people a great disservice." But they stayed in the family. Right? All of those sons stayed in the family. And then when the brothers ultimately, you know, the brothers sold Yosef, we could say down the river, but don't know if it was the river so much, but yeah, but you understand that
Rachel's son was a tzaddik.
Who?
Rachel's son was a tzaddik, and their son Yosef a tzaddik.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who was a tzaddik, and those were all quite flawed. The sons of Leah.
So what does that mean?
It's a
no, no, you have to, it has to connect.
Right?
To, you have to make it connect.
Yeah, because I said that we hear words were kind of diminishing the characteristics, but at the end we say that Reuben was as unstable as water, and Shimon and Levi were took part in the avenging of their sister, Yehudah, Zehelish of Yehudah and Tamar, and then you have Yosef and Tzaddik. So where does he come from? Mother and father, as we're saying. So that he is a mother, his name is Rachel, and he comes out to be a tzaddik, the only Tzaddik there in that group.
So I would say, just to summarize, I would say that the children, all the children of Abraham and Sarah, and all the children of Yitzhak and Rivka, and they were all the children of Yaakov and his wives. The way it divides up is that not everybody is going to look like Abraham, but some will. And not everybody is going to look like Yitzhak, but some will. And then most of them will look like Yaakov. So when you say Yosef HaTzadik, Yosef HaTzadik, so you're referring to something, some ability that he had to internalize his goals, where he was going, what he was doing. And even though he was on a certain path to glory, he didn't let the path to glory change his essential nature of who he was. And so he was the son of Yitzchak, or son of, but also the son of Yitzchak. So that's that. The fact that you have diversity from the time of Yaakov and on is a glorious thing, actually. It's the way we've managed to continue to exist. If everybody was the same, everybody had the same genetic makeup, then it would be easy to find and destroy. So that's what I think. Yes, you could have Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't need much more proof than that. It is because when it comes to Yosef at Tzaddik, it may not be perfectly clear what he did that was so righteous, other than running away from Potiphar's wife. But with Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, it's quite clear. I mean, the Rambam points out that, you know, Avraham Avinu was Ohavi, he was the glorious personality. But Moshe Rabbeinu is the only one who could bring the Torah into the world. And that makes him the ultimate master. That gives Moshe Rabbeinu mastery even over Avraham Avinu, who figured it out on his own but couldn't pass it down. Really, I mean, he couldn't teach Ishmael, he couldn't teach Lot, he couldn't teach the people who came with him. I mean, the pasuk says that they were converts. What happened to them? They couldn't hold on. They couldn't hang in there with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is so far away from the reality of things that no one could hang in there. Have a good Shabbos.